with Judge Jill Pryor and Judge Julie Carnes. We welcome you this morning. This is the last day of our oral argument this week, and probably everybody's ready to finish up this and begin holiday, thinking about the holidays. I'm assuming you all are familiar with our traffic light system, and so I won't go through that, but I'm going to try to enforce that. And with that, we will get underway with the first case of Tokyo Gwinnett LLC versus Gwinnett County.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Kerry Wiggins on behalf of Tokyo Valentino, and happy Friday. I know the court's familiar with the posture and the facts in the briefs. I just would reiterate, this is our second visit to the court on a dismissal from a 12B6 order. In all parties and the court, the district court, everyone agrees there are still federal claims to be explored. The first dismissal was based on mootness primarily, although there was a suggestion in the order, the three-sentence order, that the case might not be ripe. That was based on representations by Gwinnett County that it was not enforcing or planning to enforce the new adult entertainment ordinances. But interestingly, a day after Gwinnett County made that representation before this court on the first appeal, it filed a state court lawsuit. And a couple weeks later notified this court that the ripeness argument was no longer on the table, and that the appeal before this court should be dismissed on younger abstention grounds. So that brings us to this case. We filed a motion for leave to amend the complaint. We did our very best to lay out the facts with all particularity, did our best to lay out the claims, and the spirit and really the letter of the complaint is that the trilogy of ordinances used by Gwinnett County, the licensing ordinance, the zoning ordinance, and the unified development ordinance altogether, were going to force Tokyo Valentino to close, to stop its mode of operation, which included selling over 100 sexual devices. I feel like she should tell the court, these are not the only cases I do. I feel like I'm always here on a sexual device case.
I didn't know that.
We do all kinds of
civil rights. Thanks for putting
it on the record. We do all kinds of civil rights cases.
I'll think of you completely differently now.
Okay. I've told my grandmother and my mother, and they seem to understand. So the district court this time around said, hey, there's no standing. Our position is that exalts form over substance. We did everything that we think you could do
With regard to the damages claim on the old ordinances, I can't find in your second amended complaint where you say that you didn't do anything, do something, you know, you didn't sell devices, you lost profits. Where is that in the complaint?
Judge Pryor, paragraphs 66, 67, 69 through 70, and of course in the ad danum clause where we pray for nominal damages, we have laid out what we believe are our damages. When you're in the posture that Tokyo Gwinnett was in, you're being told that you're going to be ticketed, you're license suspended, you're forced to go hire an attorney. They didn't want to take this.
But what did you do as a result of those threats or those concerns? You know, what did you not do that you otherwise would have done?
Well, there are two grounds. Let me answer your question first. They were timid, and they had to hire a law firm to push their case. So yes, the damage is the money spent on attorneys. That, of course, directly impacts profits. And there is an allegation that its goodwill has been damaged. Although that's not pled with particularity, there is that allegation that goodwill is being damaged. Some people say there's no such thing as bad PR, but when you're in the paper and you're being told that you're an illegal operation, some people don't want to go to your store anymore. That's the weaker, admittedly, when it comes to standing. That's the admittedly weaker argument. The stronger argument is that the county takes the position that Tokyo Valentino was always an illegal business. And if it's always been an illegal business, it can never be a lawful nonconforming business. Ergo, it can never meet Section 260-10, which is the general nonconforming grandfather provision in the Gwinnett County Ordinance. It can never meet 260-10's criteria to be a lawful nonconforming use.
So I didn't read Judge Thrash's order to make the distinction in his standing analysis between the damages claim and the declaratory judgment claim. And that's the distinction you're making now, right?
I am.
Okay. And the outcome can be different.
That's true.
Yes.
Right.
Why doesn't Flanagan control in terms of the nominal damages issue and there being a lack of standing to the extent that seems to be your main articulation of damages?
Yes, Judge Carnes, and maybe I'm not articulating it well here this morning. It's what I just said. It's the county refers to Tokyo Valentino as a habitual violator, something to that effect. And our position is that Tokyo opened lawfully. It read the ordinance.
I read Flanagan to say, for the most part, when the only damages, and by that I mean money damages you're alleging, are nominal damages, you're pretty much going to lose in terms of standing. There are some exceptions. I think there's a cite to Judge McConnell's decision where when there's a real legal dispute and there are real legal ramifications and there's a legal principle to be vindicated, such as a land title dispute or libel reputation. But when you get down to all of it and take all the words out and all you're talking about are nominal damages, I read Flanagan as saying that's not enough for standing. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Yes, Judge. Well, in Flanagan's, of course, Sandy Springs had banned the commercial distribution of sexual devices, and they repealed it. They repealed it, gone. And there was no longer any inhibition on the store, insurrection in that case, to sell the devices. Here, it's just the opposite. Because Gwinnett County takes the position that Tokyo was illegal from its inception, it doesn't qualify as being a lawful nonconforming use. It's considered to be an unlawful nonconforming use, and therefore it can't get the grandfather rights that it otherwise would be available to it under the general ordinances in Gwinnett County. So that's not a money issue necessarily, but it's certainly the crux of the case. So we have this standing question, and the district court came up with the theory that because the Unified Development Ordinance did not list sexual device store as a use, the use was always prohibited. We have briefed that thoroughly. If the court has any questions, I would just say this. Rule 8 says what it says. Everyone is familiar with it, a short and plain statement. Everyone knew, the district court, and I would submit Gwinnett County, everyone knew that the issue with Tokyo Valentino is that the county was enforcing these ordinances against it, including the UDO, to make it stop operating in its format. And we asked the district court if we clarified our position in the response to the motion to dismiss. We asked if it was a hyper-technical requirement. We asked for permission to amend the complaint to make that clarification. It would have just required eliminating maybe a word or two. Hyper-technical. I would remind the court that the U.S. Supreme Court in Johnson versus City of Shelby, 2014, a summary reversal, the Fifth Circuit, I believe, said, look, having a civil rights case, of course, having informed the city of the factual basis for their complaint, they were required to do no more to stave off threshold dismissal for want of an adequate statement of their claim. And in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court let the plaintiff add Section 1983 as a claim. Here, we're being told that we didn't add the 100.1 section in our complaint, if that makes sense. I think the Younger issue melts away if you do reach and agree with us on the standing. if there are any questions on Younger, I'm happy to entertain them.
Otherwise, well, assume that we don't. I mean, my question on Younger is it is an abuse of discretion standard. And as far as the new ordinance, assuming that's what we're talking about, what we're dealing with, the district court had done nothing on that, whereas the state court had actually had some substantive work, had a hearing, and they were getting going on that. District court had done nothing. And given the case law on Younger and the fact it is an abuse of discretion standard, what's your best argument why Judge Thrash abused his discretion when he did abstain?
The best argument is that he dismissed the case initially in error. The dismissal in 2016 was error. And that is the but-for causation of the...
But that may be so, but the notion I get from Younger is that when you're talking about civil enforcement, civil prosecutions, that there's some notion that the state has a right to do that. It's just like we don't step in on a criminal case in the middle, no matter how we get to that point, and interfere. And so the state has a right to enforce its laws. And certainly, if you've got a scenario on the case law where the federal case has been going and there a lot has happened, or they've done more, but here, the only substantive action on the case had been in the state, and there, even if it was a mistake by Judge Thrash, as it turns out, he really had done nothing on this new ordinance, correct?
Well, Judge Carnes, I would say that I think that the amount of work done on the front end of this case has been understated. We didn't have an evidentiary preliminary injunction hearing, but that's only because we thoroughly briefed the initial issues and we agreed by consent to a multi-month injunction. That's what happened. And I would say that the second round of ordinances that were adopted by Gwinnett County were plainly a reaction to my client opening the store, asking to operate in this format. It's part of a continuum. It's part of an effort to quell or stop the store from operating in this format. The complaint should have been amended. And, you know, just like Rule 15, you look back to the original filing date. It's a little artificial to sever it midstream based on what we didn't allege bad faith exception to Younger, but, you know, you can see what happened. They saw an opportunity to try to derail Tokyo and get it out of this court. That was the chosen forum. So that's the argument for that. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Scott Berchtold on behalf of Gwinnett County. I will address the injury in fact portion of standing first, then I'll turn to the redressability argument, and then finally I'll finish up with a Younger abstention. Judge Pryor's question is directly on point. There's no allegation of damages. In his argument, Mr. Wiggins just pointed to paragraphs 66, 67, 68 of the second amended complaint. I have those in front of me. There's no allegation that they stopped selling sexual devices. In fact, the contrary is true. Record entry 44, which is the second amended complaint at paragraph 78, says that Tokyo expended a great deal of time and money to open and begin operating a retail theme, erotic theme retail store that displays and sells well over 100 sexual devices. So they've been doing that from day one. They never stopped doing that, and there's no allegation that they did. And it's their burden under FWPBS versus City of Dallas from the U.S. Supreme Court to affirmatively plead facts that show the jurisdictional element of the damages claim, which, of course, was the only claim left against the old adult codes after this court's previous ruling. FWPBS versus City of Dallas happens to be another adult entertainment case, but that case stands for the proposition that the facts that are necessary to establish standing cannot be inferred argumentatively from the pleadings. You actually have to say what Judge Pryor's question was about, which is, in response to this letter from the zoning administrator, we stopped selling sexual devices and therefore suffered damages in the form of lost profits. But
what about the declaratory judgment? Standing with regard to that claim, because the amended complaint does say, you know, that we were operating lawfully under the 2015 adult code.
Well, that's a claim.
I mean, I'm sorry, before the 2015 adult code.
Correct, Your Honor. Now, here's the important part about that. In this court's original ruling in 2016 from the first dismissal, this court ruled that it was proper for the district court to dismiss the declaratory and injunctive relief claims against the old adult codes, which is what he's talking about. So that was not even on the table. When it came back down, all that was left pertaining to the old adult entertainment codes was the claim for damages. And Judge Thrash did distinguish between the two at page 10 of his order, which is record entry 62. At the bottom of page 9 of the order, he explains that the most important part about the injury in fact defect in standing is that the complaint, nothing in the complaint shows that Tokyo Valentino actually suffered an injury as a result of the old regulations. Then on the next page, bottom of that full page paragraph almost, he says, while the threat of future harm is enough to show standing when, for example, a plaintiff is seeking an injunction or when damages may continue into the future, it is not enough when only seeking compensation for past damages. Because Tokyo Valentino was never actually prevented from selling adult sexual devices under the old regulations, it never suffered any actual harm. And so that's all that was left when the case came back to Judge Thrash with regard to the old adult codes. There's another reason.
Give me the docket number and page.
I'm sorry. I was speaking from docket entry 62 at page 10.
Oh, okay.
Pages 9 and 10. And the other problem is that Judge Thrash had, in addition to the fact that there was no evidence that they ever stopped selling sexual devices, in fact, they're making their claim that they've had a continuous, lawful, non-conforming use by continuously selling well over 100 sexual devices. So there's no allegation of damages that would preserve standing as to the old ordinances. But there's another reason that they lack standing, and that's redressability. And they never challenged UDO 230-100. And that is a rule that's pre-existing. It's generally applicable in the county zoning code that if a use is not listed in the table of uses, it is presumptively prohibited. They never challenged that. And Judge Thrash pointed that out with very strong clarity, that they tried to challenge a 2015 ordinance that amended a couple definitions in the Uniform Development Ordinance, but they never challenged the pre-existing, long-standing rule that a use that's not listed has never been, or the use is not listed in the table of uses, therefore it's prohibited. And that's KH Outdoor versus Clay County. That's this court's decision from 2007 in which a billboard company tried to erect a billboard and it was denied a permit by the Clay County authorities. When it got to summary judgment, it turned out that there was another provision of law, a state law, the Florida Building Code and construction plan review requirements that they didn't meet. And even though that arose much later, this court affirmed a dismissal for lack of standing because even if they had fully complied with the county's sign ordinance, they didn't meet the standards under the state law and their billboard couldn't be erected. And in this case, we have a situation where a business came in. It's just like the Stardust case that Judge Pryor wrote the opinion on 4 months ago in August. It's the same guy. It's Mr. Morrison, and he got a license to do a tobacco store, and then guess what? Less than 2 weeks later, just as in that case, opening paragraph of Judge Pryor's opinion, less than 2 weeks later, he says, oh, I'm going to add all these sexual devices. And that's what he did. He got a letter from the zoning administrator, and he did nothing but file a federal lawsuit. And I'm sorry, filing a lawsuit and hiring a lawyer is not a claim for damages. And otherwise, Article 3 standing requirements would be eviscerated. So there's no basis for that. Certainly, Judge Carnes is correct that the en banc decision of this court on the nominal damages claim certainly doesn't save claims against the old adult codes. But so there's two independent standing defects. There's the lack of any injury in fact because they've continuously sold sexual devices since day one, and they tell us that in paragraph 78 of their complaint, and they make no affirmative allegation to the contrary that they stopped selling sexual devices, which is their duty under FWPBS to preserve standing on the damages claim. And then we have this redressability defect of a code that they never challenged, and that's 230-100. So for those two reasons, the district court, Judge Thrash, was correct to dismiss on standing grounds. Now, if I could turn to younger abstention. Oh, I want to mention one other thing. There was some colloquy there at the beginning of my opponent's argument about the sequence of when things happened that was just not true or accurate under the record. He said that the city came in December of 2015 and said the motion to amend the complaint wasn't ripe because the county had not yet enforced or threatened to enforce its ordinance. And that's true. But it's not true that the very next day we filed a lawsuit. That's crazy. What happened is in December of 2015, there was a 90-day grace period in effect in the ordinance that didn't expire until sometime in January. And what happened was we didn't know that since the new code allowed them to sell up to 100 sexual devices, if they would just sell 99 sexual devices and run a tobacco store like they got a license for. But they didn't do that. And so in 2016, what happened is they continued operating illegally in violation of the October 2015 adult code amendments, and they continued operating without even a general business license because their tobacco license had expired. So 9 months after continuously violating the ordinance, then the county finally filed suit for an injunction under the new codes that the district court had never done anything with. And why is that relevant to younger abstention? Well, it's relevant to younger abstention because in September of 2016, the county went to court on its motion, to state court, on its motion for preliminary injunction to stop the ongoing violations of its law. And when it got there, it said, Mr. Wiggins raised the same argument. Oh, well, I'm grandfathered on this lawful use. And the county said, no, if it's true, if you're allegation that you weren't covered under the old adult codes is true, then you were an unlisted use, and then you're governed by 230-100, which says any use that's not listed in the table of uses in the zoning ordinance is prohibited. So that's you can't claim non-conforming use. Mr. Wiggins thinks that if you were doing something that wasn't specifically prohibited by a zoning ordinance, that you're grandfathered under state law, and that's not true, because you were specifically prohibited. You were prohibited by a general provision that has nothing to do with adult entertainment that says if there's a use that you're trying to do that is not listed in the table, it's presumptively prohibited.
My observation about that is, so we're going to decide on 12B6 that what they were running was not a novelty shop, which is listed?
Well, if that was all that they had in the record, maybe there would be an argument about it. But they didn't challenge 230-100. In other words, they're making the argument now.
They asked to amend their complaint, and they were denied the opportunity to amend their complaint.
But I guess what I'm saying about the sequence of events, Your Honor, and I totally understand your question, Judge Martin, but let me be clear. We made that argument on September 8th, 2016. This is tab 59-1 in the supplemental appendix. I included the excerpt of our transcript where we argued 230-1. It wasn't until more than 2 months later, on November 9th, 2016, that the plaintiffs filed their amended complaint. They could have challenged what we told them 2 months before.
I'm saying is that they tried to amend way back in the first lawsuit, and you opposed it, and they were denied the opportunity.
That's right, because it either wasn't ripe or the county hadn't enforced. We didn't know what they would do when the grace period ran out. We didn't know they would continue violating the law for 9 months.
But the point is, if the district court erred in dismissing the case and not allowing them to amend, then that seems to be compounding the abuse by saying, well, they didn't amend their complaint early enough, and therefore the state action got ahead of it.
Well, that's a very understandable concern, but here's the critical thing that we're missing, and that is they weren't in state court. They weren't on a back end of a state court civil prosecution for injunction because they weren't able to amend their complaint. They were there because they were violating the law before they got judicial relief from the federal court. And that's.
But if we're looking at which suit has proceeded farther, which is one of the elements that we look at, the only reason they weren't ahead of the state court action is because of the district court's error. Isn't that right?
No, Your Honor, I disagree. There would have never been a state court action but for their error in violating the law in 2016. The court denied dismissal or amendment to the thing in January 2016, and they weren't sued until not 8 months later. But here's the point. There have been no proceedings of substance in the federal court on any of these ordinances. Because
it had been to this court.
What's that?
It had been to this court.
It's been to this court, but that wasn't a proceeding on substance on the merits. There was a dismissal order, and now we're here on a second dismissal order. But let's
they tried to amend and were denied the opportunity to amend.
Let me say, Your Honor, let's say that they had been granted leave to amend in December 2015. Let's say that had gone differently. Let's say that Judge Thrash had dismissed the claims against the old codes on mootness grounds or what have you, and ignore the damages claim for a second, which we know is not supported by any allegations in the Second Amendment complaint. But let's say that he had granted them leave to amend. No difference in the outcome under Duran versus Salem Inn from the Supreme Court, because they continued violating the law, and they would have been cited and prosecuted like they were in August 2016, 8 months later, and they would have been subject to Younger. See, they're making an argument, let's go back in time to when we first sought to amend our complaint, and that would change the outcome under Younger, but it wouldn't, Your Honor, because...
Well, I guess what I'm focusing on is, you know, the rule, you know, if there has been significant federal litigation, the cases use the language, if the federal litigation is only in an embryonic stage and the state litigation is ongoing, then you abstain, the federal courts abstain so the state courts can proceed. Well, my observation is neither one of those things were true. I mean, this litigation had gone up. You'd been litigating in front of Judge Thrash in federal court, come up on appeal, gone back, and only after that was the state action filed? I mean, significantly later. You say it's a different action, but in their complaint, they say, you know, we were grandfathered in under in their amended complaint when they were finally allowed to amend.
Yes,
they say, you know, we fall under the, you know, we have our grandfathered in under the old.
Well, Your Honor, two things. There was no proceedings of substance on the second set of ordinances in the trial court. We know that for sure. And you're saying there would have been had they been granted leave to amend.
I'm not saying. I'm just. Well, I'm asking you a question.
Right. Well, I think it's still.
The opportunity for me is to tell you what my concerns are.
I totally understand. And Your Honor, I think it's a Duran versus Salem Inn. Think about that case. That was a case where there were people doing adult entertainment in bars in New York, and then there was a new ordinance that was adopted. They go to federal court. So the federal lawsuit against the new ordinance was filed first in time. They file a motion for TRO. It's denied instanter. And the court the same day sets a preliminary injunction for 2 weeks out. So he's going to have a preliminary injunction. It's coming. The hearing's coming. And the next day, one of the three plaintiffs resumes topless dancing, and he's cited for it. And there's a pending state prosecution. The U.S. Supreme Court said it was correct to grant a preliminary injunction 2 weeks later against the two, but Younger abstention fully applied to that business because instead of waiting for the development of their federal lawsuit and obtaining federal judicial relief, they went ahead and subjected themselves to a state prosecution by violating the ordinance. If you want to invoke Younger and stay in federal court, or if you want to avoid Younger and stay in federal court, you have to either get judicial relief from the federal court or abstain from violating the law. And that's black letter law from the Supreme Court. So even if this second amended complaint was filed 4 months after the state action commenced, which is the real date, when did the state action commence? But even if it had been filed later, because they were continuously operating in violation of the law, they subjected themselves to Younger abstention. And under Duran versus Salem Inn, that's of their own doing. Your Honor, I see that my time is up. If the court has any further questions, I'd be glad to.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you, Your Honor. We ask that the trial court's decision be affirmed.
A few points in rebuttal. The declaratory judgment count in the complaint, when this court remanded the first appeal, it did say the claims for injunctive and declaratory relief against the old ordinance were moot as they were pled in the initial complaint. Here in the second amended complaint, we're specifically in paragraphs 87 and 88 saying, in light of the 2015 adoption of the ordinances, there is uncertainty. This ordinance is apparently vague as applied. We don't believe the initial ordinance applied to us, i.e., there's a nonconforming use right in play. The county takes the opposite position. That is what we were seeking declaratory relief for. That is not moot. That is a claim that was approved by the complaint that was reviewed by the court, and we were allowed to file. The redressability issue, I just feel like, as we wrote in our brief, I feel like we got sandbagged. You know, Federal Rule Civil Procedure 1, a speedy, efficient, fair, I don't know the exact phrase. We are traveling in the opposite direction. My brethren is citing a transcript that they attached to a reply brief down below to show that 2 months before we filed the Second Amendment complaint, we were on notice that 200-100.1 was at issue. I'm going to tell you something. Once Judge Thrash entered the order saying, file your Second Amendment complaint, I filed it within a day, maybe within 2 days, as the complaint that was reviewed by this court and by Judge Thrash and that he told me to file. So we file it. I think it's incorrect to attach a UDO table of uses, and the court has seen the table of uses. There are many, many uses. But guess what? You can't imagine everything under the sun. And tell the district court that, oh, Gwinnett County has a strict policy, a strict interpretation of that UDO. And that is an absolute improper inference for the district court to take, especially at a 12B6 stage. How about I get some discovery and I ask questions like, well, okay, how is Spencer's Gift Store operating? They sell plenty of sexual devices. You carved out an exception in the ordinance for Spencer's. We'll show this in discovery. This is obviously not in the pleading. But it says a regional shopping mall is not counted as a sex paraphernalia store. Well, why not? Why do you need about 40 acres in order to operate a sex paraphernalia store? Well, Gwinnett County has 3 malls. 2 of them have a Spencer's Gift Store. Is the county taking the position that Spencer's Gift Store has been illegal from its inception? Because up until 2015, there was no sexual paraphernalia store in the UDO. So these are the kinds of things we would explore in discovery. We would show that the UDO position that the district court adopted wholesale is not a valid position. I would remind the court, my client is very sophisticated. They don't need me. They read the ordinances and they do what they do. And yes, they're apprehensive. Sometimes they have trouble getting a business license. And they do make a decision after they obtain it or have trouble not getting it, whether they're gonna add adult erotic media to their mix. There's nothing unlawful about that. This court in Flyfish versus Cocoa Beach recognized in that case that the plaintiff didn't indicate that they would have nude dancing when they applied for their business license. Well, guess what? Cocoa Beach ordinance didn't consider nude dancing to be adult entertainment. This court recognized that and said, that plaintiff has a right to fill out the application truthfully, no material misrepresentations. That's precisely what my client did, and here we are 3 years later. So we would ask for an opportunity to engage in discovery and pursue our claims. Thank you.
Thank you. Tell your grandmother you conducted yourself well.
Well, I did.
All right. Thank you for the presentation. So.